Good evening. I am Hank Jones. You're listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here at Global Patriot Radio. You can find us, of course, at blogtalkradio.com. Mondays, the Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito and Big Al. Mamma Mia No Sharia, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Wednesdays, it's me, Hank Jones. Hank Jones Poly Sports. Politics and sports colliding, as they often do. 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Wednesdays. I'll always let you know when the time changes on that for whatever reason. Saturday nights, 10 p.m. to midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam. And there's actually some stuff going on before we get to all that stuff, but meanwhile, I'm hanging out here at the Space Force Observation Outpost. The mini Aussie has been fed. Shoulder-high jump in anticipation of getting her food tonight. Mrs. Hank is working semi-hard over at Acoustic Hankland. She's now, doesn't seem to be a super busy day for her. Speaking of politics and sports, that's our first internet laughy for the day from Babylon B. Trans pro golfer outed as man after he flawlessly parallel parks golf cart. It's a story Vito and Al talked about the other day. Al, I guess. I'm not sure Vito was out Monday, but this trans golfer who won a, I don't know if it was a PGA tournament or some female tournament, but turns out to be a guy. God. Really? I mean, really? Are we really getting to that? So anyway, several ways to listen in. Of course, listen online, blogtalkradio.com. Hit live, go to chatters down to the right, pick Global Patriot Radio. If you have an account, you can log in as IndyHawk KB has done. He's listening in the chat room, so others that want to join him, be a good idea. And of course, you can dial in as Hawkeye Mike has done, 319-527-6706. If you got something to say, and you hit the 1 on your phone, I get this little icon that pops up, a little hand raise that tells me, hey, somebody wants to talk. Come on, Hank, listen up. Wow. So there's some several things that have popped up all of a sudden. In addition to our laughies. The second laughy today, January 6th pipe bombs bear stickers reading, please return to FBI. That's not funny, but it's funny.
It's ha-ha funny.
As Ralphie Wiggum would say, or it's not ha-ha funny. Obits for this week. Last Friday, we lost singer Mary Weiss, the Shangri-Las, to COPD at age 75. Their most famous song, of course, was Leader of the Pack. They also did Remember, Walking in the Sand. Remember that one? We also lost Marlena Shaw, another singer at age 81. Her biggest hits were California Soul and Don't Ask Me to Stay Until Tomorrow, which that song served as the theme song for a movie called Looking for Mr. Goodbar. Great flick, but talk about a downer of an ending. Holy crap. Finally, we lost former PGA and Masters champion Jack Burke Jr. at age 100. He won both those titles in 1956, before I was born. God. Saturday, we lost film director Norman Jewison at the age of 97. He directed some rather monster hits, Moonstruck, Fiddler on the Roof, and In the Heat of the Night, all of which won some form of an Oscar. Sunday, we lost former World Series of Poker champion Perry Friedman at age 55 to pancreatic cancer. He was the 2002 World Series of Poker winner in the $1,500 limit Omaha high-low split eight or better event. Monday, we lost civil rights activist Dexter King. He was the son of Martin Luther King Jr. We lost him to prostate cancer at age 62. We lost a very underrated actor at age 73 named Gary Graham. Now, a lot of you, that name may not sound familiar. He played, he had roles in Hollywood Nights, Hardcore, another depressing movie. He was in several different roles in the Star Trek universe, and he was on the TV series version of the show Alien Nation, which was originally a movie with Mandy Patinkin and James Caan. But he was also one of my favorite roles of his. He was the brother of Tom Cruise's character in All the Right Moves. Remember, he's working at the mill, and he already sees what life is like, and he can't believe that his character, you know, Tom Cruise's character, is willing to pass on a scholarship offer, looking for something better, and then he messes up and gets kicked off the team and all that. But he sort of shows the futility of life in that town. And remember, there's a scene where Tom Cruise comes home and says, "What's, you know, going on?" He says, "I got laid off today at the mill." And he goes, "What are you going to do?" And he goes, "Well, tonight I'm going to go out and get drunk." And, you know, Cruise is very serious. You know, I'm so sorry, Greg. That was his name, I think. And I don't know. I just liked him as an actor. Good dude. Yesterday, we lost former news anchor and TV, I guess you'd call him like TV host, Charles Osgood. He was 91. He died from complications of dementia. We also lost former music producer and promoter Frank Farian at age 82. So that name probably doesn't ring a bell for a lot of you. And the reason it wouldn't, because he was kind of a scumbag. And he sort of fell out of favor with, like, everyone. Like, nobody liked him after a while. So he was the guy behind Milli Vanilli, believe it or not. He was like the guy that pushed Milli Vanilli. Remember, they were the lip sync guys. They were like a dance pop duo, but it turned out they were lip syncing anyone. They won the Grammy for Best New Artist. And then when news of the lip sync got out, Frank Farian just sort of like hung them out to dry. Said, yeah, they were faking it all along. He didn't mention that he was the one behind that. Yeah, anyone who watched that, you know, VH1 back when they actually did music stuff, they had that show Behind the Music, and they did a special on them, one of whom died, self, Rob Pilatus, drug OD. But remember that segment? They show them like dancing, and then their record gets stuck. The song Girl You Know It's True, and it gets stuck. It's like, girl, you know, it's girl, you know. And the guy was like dancing crazily back, you know, doing the same motion over and over, trying to, you know, to duplicate the, I mean, it was horrific, but sad for them. And then, of course, they, you know, it went down the tubes, basically. They tried to do another album, if you remember, and they appeared on the Arsenio Hall show, and they didn't, it didn't go well, of course. And it was really, I don't know, it was just sad as hell. And just, what a scumbag Frank Farian was. So he's gone. He's gone from our planet. As I've talked about before, please continue praying. If you haven't started, please start. Continue praying for Felicia Goodson and her family. She is in the, she's finishing up her cancer treatment, so hopefully everything goes well. But yeah, great lady. Let's see. Don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's premier 24-hour call center, message and answering service company, property manager. Don't want to go back to your office after COVID. I mean, you're 4 years after COVID started. Yeah, give them a call. They work with remote staff as well. 800-555-3738, or look them up on the web, alliancecommunications.com. Here's another good laughy from the Babylon Bee. Life hack. Save money on home improvements by just not doing them. I like that. That's a good one. Hell yes, that's a good one. So, okay, let's get to some of this stuff. Before we really I guess you'd say breaking. The Ohio Senate has voted to override Governor Mike DeWine's veto against Ohio House Bill 68. It would ban transgender minors from receiving gender-affirming medical care and prevent transgender girls from taking part in girls and women's sports. Restricts the use of puberty blockers, hormone therapy, or surgeries for transgender youth. Does not restrict the use of this care on non-transgender youth, and specifically includes an exception for intersex youth with ambiguous or abnormal sex characteristics, and a grandfather clause allows transgender people already receiving care to continue to receive that care. So they often talk about the fact that it deals with mental health care. And I, you know, I just mentioned the golfer, the PGA golfer or LPGA golfer who friggin' won a tournament and it's a guy. I mean, what the hell? What the hell? But so, yeah, that's been overridden. Mike DeWine trying to kowtow to whoever. And he was just a federal judge did rule a law in Arkansas unconstitutional. Several have been blocked, but going through the appeals process. But so the state Senate in Ohio has overridden Governor DeWine's bill. Meanwhile, Texas authorities are refusing to abide by the Supreme Court's statement that the Biden administration can take down the barbed wire they have been putting up at the border. The DHS is demanding that authorities stand down. They're not having it. What's really an issue is that the DHS is demanding full access to Shelby Park in Eagle Pass, Texas. But the state says they're not going to back down. The state court ruled Monday that they can take down the concertina wire. But the next day, the state began erecting more. Good. Good. Protect its own border. And the Supreme Court is going to tell them that they can't, that the federal government can come in and protect it, and the federal government is not doing its job? I'm sorry. The state has the right to protect its border, especially when it's an international border. We're not talking about the border between Illinois and Wisconsin, for God's sake. So, good for them. And this little bombshell out of Arizona. The Arizona chairman of the Republican Party has resigned amid Carrie Lake bribery allegations. Now, the chairman said he resigned from his role January 23rd, yesterday, after a recording of him was leaked that apparently showed him offering U.S. Senate candidate Carrie Lake money to stay out of the Senate race. Jeff DeWitt, in his resignation statement, suggested Ms. Lake's team allegedly secretly recorded their conversation before leaking it to the media. He also accused her team of threatening to release more recordings, which he described as being taken out of context, although he provided few details. In other words, yeah, there's a lot more shit of me out there that I did wrong, but it's out of context, but I'm still resigning anyway. He says, I said things I regret, but I realized when hearing Lake's recording that I was set up. I believe she orchestrated this entire situation to have control over the state party, and it is obvious from the recording that she crafted her performance responses with the knowledge that she was recording it, intending to use this recording later to portray herself as a hero. You know what? Don't offer the bribe, idiot. You said it was a deceptive tactic. Selectively edited audio recording, but he resigns anyway. Unbelievable, isn't it? He said his relationship with Ms. Lake was based on friendship, and the conversation that is now being scrutinized was an open, unguarded exchange between friends in the living room of her house. I genuinely believed I was offering a helpful perspective to someone I considered a friend. I received an ultimatum from Blake's team: resign today or face the release of a new, more damaging recording. I'm truly unsure of its contents, but considering our numerous past open conversations as friends, I have decided not to take the risk. You know what? It's pretty clear that these scumbags are, they're doing whatever it takes to, these never-Trumper types. And it really needs to just be, they need to be ferreted out. They need to be rooted out. It's that simple. So, yeah, this guy's dropped, has resigned as chairman of the Republican Party. Most of us wish Ronna Romney McDaniel would also follow suit, but she won't. She'll stay as long as she can. Moving on, President Trump easily won the New Hampshire primary over Nikki Haley yesterday. He has also gained the endorsement of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Governor DeSantis dropped out over the weekend. He's also secured official endorsements of Texas Senator Ted Cruz and South Carolina Senator Tim Scott. Remember, Tim Scott dropped out of the race a while ago. For whatever reason, Nikki Haley refuses to drop out of the race. She did have support from New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu and the rest of the Sununu family. By the way, all of whom have sucked extensively from the government trough. I mean, they're not much different than the Bush family in that respect, although I don't think they've ever done anything privately. At least some of the Bush family has done that. Here's an interesting article from American Action News on the state of Red China's stock market and its economy. Possible stimulus action by the Red China government. No lie. China looks to huge stimulus package to prop up ailing stock market. Had a precipitous drop since the start of 2024. So it fails to recover to pre-COVID-19 pandemic levels because they're creating the stupid things. Prompting a possible government stimulus, according to Bloomberg, or Gloomberg as I call it. Red China is considering mobilizing the equivalent of $278 billion from offshore state-owned enterprises to buy shares in the country's rapidly declining stock market. Proposals come as the country's CSI 300 index hit a five-year low due to a limping economy plagued by a debt-laden real estate sector leading to a massive outflow of foreign capital. Potential support package should be able to stem declines in the short term and stabilize markets into the Lunar New Year. But state buying alone has historically had limited success in turning around market sentiment, if not followed up by further measures, says Marvin Chen, strategist at Bloomberg Intelligence. Yeah, it peaked at the beginning of 2021 around 5,750 points. Has since had a steady decline, well below 3,500. $6 trillion in lost capital during the drop from 2021. Economy only expanded 5.2% in 2023. It's being dragged by the once booming real estate sector. God, why don't they just sell back all the shit they bought in the United States? It's probably what they're going to do, actually. In the end, that's what they'll have to do. They won't be able to sustain it otherwise. Of course, we're stupid. We'll probably give them some kind of a stimulus package ourselves. Congress will vote something in, or Biden will say we need to do it. Meaning Barack will say we need to do it, and Biden will pretend to come up with the idea himself. So Ivanka Nancy Pelosi and AOC are in some potential hot water. This is according to the Patriot Journal newsletter. Evidently, they have spent large sums of tax dollars for basically they're using social media, government resources of social media, campaign for themselves and portraying it as official government endorsement. They're linking official government resources to their campaign accounts, which is a violation of federal law and House ethics rules regulating the social media activity of Congress. They've published numerous social media posts to their campaign accounts using official government resources or reposting official government content. While reposting content is common, they cannot use it as official resources for their campaigns. Nothing will happen. I mean, but it's out there. It's, people need to know what's going on. For damn sure. Today's news of the unbelievable. We have this from Patriot News today. So Ray Epps was offered a plea deal, if you remember, but prosecutors admit in filings that he committed multiple crimes. Kelly has obtained a transcript of the sentencing hearing. So he was among the first protesters to breach Capitol police lines on January 6th. He was also urging individuals to enter the Capitol on multiple occasions on January 5th and 6th. He received notably lenient treatment from federal prosecutors compared to the majority. Over 3 years after the protest, the FBI is conducting no-knock raids targeting demonstrators who typically face charges such as disorderly conduct, picketing in the Capitol building, remaining in restricted grounds, and related trespassing-related misdemeanors. Despite federal prosecutors largely refraining from charging nonviolent protesters with a felony statute of obstruction of an official proceeding, there are still instances where it is brought. Awaits a ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court. In the case of Ray Epps, he faced charges but pleaded guilty to just one count of disorderly conduct. While numerous nonviolent protesters with clean records have received lengthy jail sentences, Epps was sentenced to a year of probation and 100 hours of community service. According to the obtained sentencing hearing transcript, prosecutors acknowledge that he committed several crimes. Your Honor, Ray Epps has been unfairly scapegoated, but he is not a victim. He was not a secret agent of the government on January 6th, trying to trick unwitting Trump supporters into committing federal crimes, stated Assistant U.S. Attorney Michael Gordon. That's not what happened, but he is not innocent either. He further conceded, Epps did not start the riot or cause it, but he did make it much worse. He committed multiple crimes on that day. He's only pled to one because that's the plea offer we made with him. But he committed multiple crimes that day. He was convinced the election had been stolen and that the steal needed to be stopped. Gordon further admitted that on the 5th, Epps attempted to persuade people to enter the Capitol the next day, adding that Epps did everything he could to make that happen. Elsewhere in the transcript, prosecutors explained that they opted not to charge Epps with felony obstruction of an official proceeding and other misdemeanors because he was, quote, the victim of this widespread conspiracy theory that is both false and continually be promoted by many. Wait a second. So this is how prosecutors decided to give him a significant break of a misdemeanor plea offer. The victim of this, wouldn't that make everybody else victims of the same widespread conspiracy theory? What made Ray Epps special in this regard? He also submitted an apology letter where he blamed Trump for making him believe in the big lie, quote unquote. He also praised the FBI, stating that, quote, the blame of the insurrection is not on the FBI. It is on those who were at the Capitol engaged in insurrectionist activities and those who misled Americans like myself into believing the election had been stolen. Got a question for Ray Epps. what changed his mind? I mean, he wasn't in jail all this time. Presumably, he wasn't sent to re-education camp. So what changed? I'd like to know what changed. Gordon praised Epps for referring to the protests as an insurrection aimed at overturning a lawful, correct election result. My God. One could only presume that the judge was an actual kangaroo. I mean, Jesus. He's been defended by a number of pro-Biden and corporate media outlets, all of whom defended or downplayed months of left-wing violence in 2020, while branding all January 6th protesters as violent insurrectionists, though for some reason Epps has been spared that treatment. Instead, of course, he got that softball interview on 60 Minutes to say that he was a victim of conspiracy theories. Here's a really good article on the Epic Times featuring Elon Musk. He talks about racism / anti-Semitism and DEI, how that is discriminatory and fundamentally anti-Semitic. So he said he believes diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, inherently involve discrimination and are fundamentally anti-Semitic. In an interview with commentator Ben Shapiro on January 22nd at the European Jewish Association Conference in Poland, the owner of X, formerly Twitter, said people, quote, should always be wary of any name that sounds like it could come out of a George Orwell book. Diversity, equity, inclusion, these all sound like nice words. But what it really means is discrimination on the basis of race, sex, and sexual orientation, and it's against merit. Thus, it is also fundamentally racist and anti-Semitic. He said that the solution to address this is for universities to focus on merit. It doesn't matter whether you're a man, woman, what race, what beliefs. What matters is how good you are at your job or your skills. We just have to get rid of the rule that if you're weaker, you're automatically good. That obviously makes no sense. He earlier toured Auschwitz, Birkenau, where at least 1.1 million people, mainly Jews, were killed by Nazi Germany during World War II. Said he was shocked to see pro-Hamas rallies across major Western cities and college campuses, including elite universities like Harvard and the University of Pennsylvania, where he attended. So all the riots that were in the major cities and college campuses, I think, was a shocking wake-up call to any sort of civilization or civil-minded person. It's really quite a shock. According to the Anti-Defamation League, ADL, Anti-Defamation League, from October 7th to January 7th, anti-Semitism incidents have dramatically surged to 3,291 from 712. Period a year ago, a 361% increase. College campuses reported at least 500 incidents, a significant increase from only 12 cases over the same period last year. This is not the first time he has raised these concerns. He questioned, January 11th, he questioned DEI hiring in the airline industry in response to a series of tweets by author James Lindsay that detailed the various DEI policies implemented by Boeing. He said, do you want to fly in an airplane where they prioritized DEI hiring over your own safety? That is actually happening. Another post, he said, people will die due to DEI, referring to the recent midair accident involving Alaska, Boeing 737 MAX 9. He criticized it on January 4th, saying, discrimination on the basis of race, which DEI does, is literally the definition of racism. He said, DEI is just another word for racism. Shame on anyone who uses it. He agreed with hedge fund billionaire Bill Ackman, who shared his view about anti-Semitism at Harvard. In his post, Ackman pointed out that the root cause of anti-Semitism at Harvard is the DEI movement that had been promulgated on campus. Under DEI ideology, Any policy, program, educational system, economic system, grading system, admission policy, and even climate change due to its disparate impact on geographies and the people that live there, etc., that leads to unequal outcomes among people of different skin colors is deemed racist. As a result, according to DEI, capitalism is racist, advanced placement exams are racist, IQ tests are racist, corporations are racist, or in other words, any merit-based program, system, or organization which has or generates outcomes for different races that are at variance with the proportion these different races represent in the population at large is by definition racist under DEI ideology. Ackman called the DEI movement itself racist. DEI is racist because reverse racism is still racism, even if it is against white people. And he says that it is remarkable that I even need to point this out. Racism against white people has become considered acceptable by many not to be racism, or alternatively, it is deemed acceptable racism. While this, of course, is absurd, it has become the prevailing view in many universities around the country. An ideology that portrays a bicameral world of oppressors and the oppressed, based principally on race or sexual identity, is a fundamentally racist ideology that will likely lead to more racism rather than less, Mr. Ackman said. A system where one obtains advantages by virtue of skin color is a racist system, and one that will generate resentment and anger among the unadvantaged, who will direct their anger at the favored groups. Duh, of course. An excellent article. Excellent article. I mean, literally, United and Boeing were doing hiring based on DEI principles. I mean, okay, this next one's actually hilarious. And while internet laughing is usually good, it's often inferior to actual news. This one's good. So, lawmaker calls for investigation into Biden robocall deterring New Hampshire voters. Democrats are up in arms after what appears to be an AI-generated robocall using President Joe Biden's voice to detract New Hampshire voters from heading to the polls. Representative Joseph Morrell, Democrat of New York, sent a letter to the Justice Department on Monday calling for investigation into the robocall, citing his concerns over how AI could potentially impact future elections. Morrell told The Hill he hopes the probe help to prevent the spread of AI-generated mis- and disinformation in future elections. The New Hampshire Attorney General's office explained the calls appeared to be an unlawful effort to disrupt the primary. They encouraged voters to disregard the message and to report any information they have about the incident to the state. It was unclear how many people received the call. This clear bid to interfere in the New Hampshire primary demands a thorough investigation and a forceful response from federal officials to deter further AI-based attacks that will disrupt American democracy and disenfranchise American voters, said Morrell's letter. Excuse me. He actually wrote this in a letter. The oaths we swore to protect and defend the Constitution require us to use every tool at our disposal to shield the sanctity of our elections. If Congress can strengthen law enforcement's ability to detect and prevent AI-based attempts to subvert our elections, we look forward to working with you to identify and achieve any meaningful and well-defined standards to protect our democracy. Okay, so why is this funny? First of all, AI is probably an improvement on the actual Dopey Joe. And also, Democrats are up in arms about a state primary in which Dopey Joe wasn't at one point anyway, even on the ballot over some procedural issues. Of course, it's just funny. I mean, seriously, Democrats citing the sanctity of our elections, talking about AI generation when it turns out that Dominion voting has been hacked and is easily programmable to change votes. Good God, I mean, what's next? Democrats taking up staunch defense of the Second Amendment, speaking of which. The Epoch Times has a great article, thusly, on our Second Amendment rights. And they talk about, this is the other day, three gun rights cases you should know about that are before the Supreme Court. So in 2022, the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin decision, Supreme Court ruled that to be constitutional, new gun laws must match the plain text of the Constitution and the, quote, history and tradition, unquote, of the United States. The test that applies today requires courts to assess whether modern firearms regulations are consistent with the Second Amendment's text and historical understanding, Clarence Thomas wrote. One of the first major post-Bruin cases, U.S. versus Rahimi, has court watchers curious about how Bruin will be applied. They heard oral arguments on November 7th of 2023. Federal law currently bars those who are under domestic violence restraining orders from presenting guns. The Supreme Court in the Rahimi case will decide if it stays or goes. Gun control advocates say the text and tradition standard of the Bruin decision, if applied in Rahimi, would allow violent abusers access to guns, resulting in the deaths of domestic violence victims. The Supreme Court must reverse this dangerous ruling, Janet Carter, Senior Director of Issues and Appeals at Everytown Law, wrote on the Everytown for Gun Safety website. Domestic abusers do not have and should not have the constitutional right to possess a firearm. Excuse me. Gun rights advocates say the Rahimi case has been mischaracterized as an attempt to arm violent criminals when it's really about protecting society without preemptively suspending constitutional rights. It's going to answer one issue, which is, do we as a country have a historical tradition of disarming people that we believe to be dangerous? William Kirk, a Washington State-based lawyer, told the Times. He specializes in the Second Amendment. He says, and the answer is, yes, we do. Second Amendment lawyers predict that the Supreme Court will uphold the federal domestic violence law in Rahimi. They hope that the court will also ensure that due process rights are protected and an avenue for returning confiscated firearms is preserved. The real issue being decided goes far beyond the narrow question, Tom Grieve, a Wisconsin criminal defense lawyer, told the Epoch Times. Mark Smith, constitutional attorney and author, agreed. He said it's vital that the court protect the due process rights of gun owners. The most important thing Second Amendment supporters should want the Supreme Court to state in the Rahimi case is that the government may not disarm any American citizen unless there is first and foremost a court finding that a person is violently dangerous after a robust evidentiary hearing with counsel, live witnesses, and ample due process. According to court records, Zachary Rahimi is a drug dealer based in Arlington, Texas, who abused his girlfriend and had a penchant for shooting at people when he was angry. In 2019, he was placed under a domestic violence restraining order that barred him from possessing or purchasing firearms. Mr. Rahimi reportedly agreed to the order during a court hearing. He later assaulted a different woman and was involved in at least five more shootings, court records show. He was indicted by a federal grand jury in the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Texas for violating the restraining order after police found guns, drugs, and cash in his home. He asked the Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, which covers Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, to toss the indictment because the restraining order was issued before he was convicted of any of the crimes for which the order was issued. The court upheld the indictment. He pleaded guilty to violating the restraining order and was sentenced to 73 months in prison. After the Bruin decision, the Fifth Circuit Court reversed its decision, according to a petition filed by the Department of Justice. The Fifth Circuit at first affirmed the indictment, reasoning that its decision in McGinnis foreclosed Rahimi's Second Amendment challenge. But after this court decided New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin, the Fifth Circuit withdrew its opinion. After receiving supplemental briefing on Bruin, the court reversed. Fifth Circuit ruled that under the Bruin standard, which relates to unlawful possession of a firearm, didn't align with the text of the Second Amendment, and that there was no historical analog to indicate that the law was in line with the U.S. history and tradition of firearms regulation. The court ruled that Mr. Rahimi had been deprived of his Second Amendment rights. So this is a pretty lengthy article, but if you don't read the Epoch Times, I urge you to start. Another case, Cargill versus Garland, more than just the bump stock issue. It's how much, the question is how much authority government agencies are allowed to exert. Are we really going to allow administrative agencies to combine all three branches of government into themselves? Cargill case came about in the wake of the 2017 Las Vegas shooting in which a killer used rifles outfitted with bump stocks to fire at concert goers in Las Vegas, killing 58 and injuring hundreds in about 10 minutes. Then President Trump requested the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives to consider whether the devices should be reclassified as illegal machine guns. In 2018, seemingly at President Trump's behest, the ATF reversed years of written opinions, some issued in response to inquiries from members of Congress, and reclassified bump stocks as machine gun parts regulated under the National Firearms Act of 1934. National Firearms Act defines a machine gun as any weapon which shoots, is designed to shoot, or can be readily restored to shoot automatically more than one shot without manual reloading by a single function of the trigger. For decades, this has been understood to mean that the gun will fire for as long as the shooter keeps the trigger pressed and will stop firing once the trigger is released. It allows the shooter to use the rifle's recoil to bump the trigger with their finger. This increases the rate of fire while ensuring that the trigger is pressed for each shot. From 2010 to 2018, the ATF held that bump stocks do not convert rifles into machine guns and therefore aren't subject to the very strict legal requirements under which machine guns fall. The late Senator Feinstein said the rule change was problematic. An ardent gun control supporter and author of the 1994 assault weapons ban, Feinstein predicted the legal battle that is playing out. She said the ATF, in a statement in 2017, said the ATF lacks authority under the law to ban bump fire stocks, period. The ATF Association, which represents the Bureau's rank and file, reiterated that the law is very clear and it does not currently allow ATF to regulate such accessories. She said if it were to change its view after a six-month review, lawsuits would be filed immediately, and they were. In 2019, Texas resident Michael Cargill sued, claiming that the ban is unconstitutional usurpation of Congress's legislative powers, TF, at the direction of President Trump. Eventually got to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which ruled in his favor. The ruling from the Fifth Circuit Court states, Cargill is correct. A plain reading of the statutory language paired with close consideration of the mechanics of a semi-automatic firearm reveals that a bump stock is excluded from the technical definition of machine gun set forth in the Gun Control Act and National Firearms Act. Lawyers who spoke with Epoch Times expect Mr. Cargill to prevail. They're shutting them down because these people have violated the Administrative Procedure Act. They have essentially gone well outside the scope. Another case involves firearms, but isn't a Second Amendment case. Civil libertarians, business groups, and Second Amendment supporters say the NRA versus Maria T. Vullo could be a landmark First Amendment case. The NRA claims that Ms. Vullo and New York State officials used their regulatory authority to coerce insurance companies, banks, and others into cutting ties with the group. Ms. Vullo was the superintendent of the New York State Department of Financial Services, the regulatory agency overseeing financial institutions in the state of New York. The NRA claims that Ms. Vullo used public statements, guidance memoranda, back-channel threats, consent decrees, and multi-million dollar fines to force businesses to drop the NRA as a customer. And it's even drawn ACLU to the side of the NRA. According to the NRA, it goes much deeper than simple financial transactions. Substitute Planned Parenthood or the Communist Party for the NRA, and the point is clear. The First Amendment bars state officials from using their regulatory power to penalize groups merely because they promote disapproved ideas. By the way, Wayne LaPierre just recently retired from the NRA. I'm not sure if that has any significance in this matter. But so, yeah, those are three gun rights cases that are really going to be important coming up from the Supreme Court. Also, speaking of guns, and also from the Epoch Times, Alec Baldwin has been indicted by a grand jury in the shooting on the set of his film Rust. He was indicted by a New Mexico grand jury. According to several media outlets, the move to indict Mr. Baldwin was confirmed Friday after the grand jury heard evidence presented by special prosecutors. He was charged with involuntary manslaughter. Specifically, he was charged with involuntary manslaughter, negligent use of a firearm, or in the alternative, involuntary manslaughter without due caution or circumspection, reported ABC. Both are fourth-degree felonies. His lawyers said they would fight the charge. We look forward to our day in court. Additional involuntary manslaughter charges were dropped in April 2023. At the time, prosecutors said they could be brought again. However, Rust armorer Hannah Gutierrez was charged with two counts of involuntary manslaughter as well. She faces an additional charge of evidence tampering. Special prosecutors Kerry Morrissey and Jason Lewis sent the gun for more forensic testing several months ago. Experts who evaluated the firearm found that it could have only fired if the trigger was pulled. This fatal incident was a consequence of the hammer being manually retracted to its fully rearward and cocked position, followed at some point by the pull or rearward depression of the trigger, the report concluded. Although Alec Baldwin repeatedly denies pulling the trigger, given the tests, findings, and observations reported here, the trigger had to be pulled or depressed sufficiently to release the fully cocked or retracted hammer of the evidence revolver. While the proceeding is shrouded in secrecy, two of the witnesses seen at the courthouse included crew members, one who was present when the fatal shot was fired and another who had walked off the set the day before due to safety concerns. Mr. Baldwin, the lead actor and co-producer of the Western movie, was pointing a gun at Ms. Hutchins, Helena Hutchins, during a rehearsal on a movie set outside Santa Fe in October 2021 when the gun went off, killing her and wounding director Joel Souza. But Mr. Baldwin has said he pulled back the hammer, but not the trigger, and the gun fired. An earlier FBI report on the agency's analysis of the gun found that, as is common with firearms of that design, it could go off without pulling the trigger if force was applied to an uncocked hammer, such as by dropping the weapon. The only way the testers could get it to fire was by striking the gun with a mallet while the hammer was down and resting on the cartridge, or pulling the trigger while it was fully cocked. The gun eventually broke during testing. The shooting resulted in a series of civil lawsuits, including wrongful death claims filed by members of Hutchins' family, centered on accusations that the defendants were lax with safety standards. Mr. Baldwin and other defendants have disputed those allegations. Ms. Hutchins' widower, Matthew Hutchins, also filed a lawsuit after the incident, reaching a settlement in 2022. It allowed for insurance funds and a portion of Rust's profits to help when the settlement was reached. Mr. Hutchins said he didn't assign blame to Mr. Baldwin. He said at the time, "I have no interest in engaging in recriminations or attribution of blame to the producers or Mr. Baldwin. All of us believe Helena's death was a terrible accident. I am grateful that the producers and the entertainment community have come together to pay tribute to Helena's final work." The Rust Movie Production Companies has paid a $100,000 fine to state workplace safety regulators after a scathing narrative of failures in violation of standard industry protocols, including testimony that production managers took limited or no action to address two misfires on set before the fatal shooting. The filming of Rust resumed last year in Montana under an agreement with the cinematographer's widow, Matthew Hutchins, that made him an executive producer. The movie's assistant director, David Halls, was named as the individual who gave the firearm to Mr. Baldwin on the day of the shooting. Last year, he signed a plea deal for, quote, the charge of negligent use of a deadly weapon and received 6 months probation, according to prosecutors. So, yeah, just what everybody thought, that Alec Baldwin was skating on that. It appears at this point he is not. It appears Alec Baldwin will face the consequences of that killing. Now, finally, before we go to break, Wendy Patterson is one that's been following this on Twitter. Others have also commented, Domenica D'Elia, Carson Crow, Stephanie Gaddis, several others. I respect all of them immensely, and they have weighed in on this or brought it further. Basically, the J6 committee has been caught. In 2021, the Capitol riot became an obsession for politicians of left-wing bent. At the time, the House was run by the Democrats. The House Select Committee on January 6th focused on anything branded former President Trump the leader of the so-called insurrection. Supposedly, thousands of hours of video and large amounts of data related to January 6th were collected. After the committee concluded its investigation and report, all information was supposed to be transitioned under GOP control in 2023 after Republicans took back the House majority. A new report has exposed Democrats for failing to abide by that transition. 4 terabytes of data were meant to be turned over to the House Administration Committee's Oversight Subcommittee. What Republicans ended up with was far short of all the files related to it. The former House Select Committee reportedly deleted 117 files containing critical information. More than 100 files were encrypted and purged from hard drives, and the committee only received 2 terabytes of data. 117 files were deleted on January 1st, 2023, right before the transition of power. One recovered file disclosed the identity of an individual whose testimony was not archived by the Select Committee. Further, we found that most of the recovered files are password protected, preventing us from determining what they contain. The chair, Barry Loudermilk, has set today as a deadline for receiving passwords for all the password-protected files. He also requested that the White House General Counsel and the DHS General Counsel meet the same deadline. He wants unedited and unredacted transcripts of White House and DHS testimony given to the former Select Committee to be delivered to his committee. So Democrats, who said they wanted everything about January 6th to be revealed to the public and said they would reveal it, now it looks like they are hiding much of what they discovered. So our folks in our Democrat folks in D.C., of course, hiding it. What does that tell you? Usually it tells you they have something to hide or they didn't find anything, compared to what they said they would find. Before we take a break, we have a pre-break internet laughy from the Babylon Bee. This is good, and it'll play into some of what I'll talk about after break. First of all, the Mike has just reminded me the Iowa Hawkeyes are playing Maryland on 10 Network in about 5 minutes. This is the men's game. Uh, This is a good one. So it'll play into what I talk about after this. A child, this is a funny from the Babylon Bee, or a laughing, child who dreamed of being an NFL referee gets the devastating news that he was born with 2020. My God. It's so true. Or as Fat Tony would say on The Simpsons, it's funny because it's true. We're going to take a break. Going to play a little music for you, like I always do. And I'm going to go try and do something. My allergies, it's something in this office where I do my show. When I close the door, allergies or something just act up. It gets really bad. I don't know what it is. So I'm trying to think of a – I was going to play one song, but I'm going to jump to something different. Why? Because I like this song. Okay, this is Tommy Bolin. Enjoy. I'll be back in about 4 minutes, 14 seconds. We'll be right back. great Tommy Bolin on guitar. That is Marching Powder off of his Teaser album. If that keyboard synthesizer sounded really familiar to any Jeff Beck fans, that was John Hammer, who figured prominently on Jeff Beck's Wired album. That and his previous album, Blow by Blow, were major swerves for Jeff into instrumental, more of a jazz fusion style, and under the production of George Martin and Narada Michael Walden. And David Sanborn on saxophone on that particular cut. Yeah, those guys, they really, they got after it back then. So I made the comment about the referee, the joke that the kid wanted to be a referee. I'm going to go a little off my outline here. In the NBA, the Portland Trail Blazers have filed an official protest with the league, basically after being victimized by atrocious officiating. They were leading 109-108 over the Oklahoma City Thunder with about 15 seconds left. Blazers head coach Chauncey Billups was trying to signal for a timeout. Guard Malcolm Brogdon was being double-teamed in the front court. Officials completely missed the timeout call from about 8 feet away, by the way, and ended up calling a double dribble on Brogdon with 15.1 seconds remaining. Billups then got onto the court screaming, and he was assessed a double technical. So Oklahoma City made one of two technical free throws to tie the game. Then they got the ball, and they won on a basket with 1.2 seconds left. Now, my brother Tommy, always says, officials shouldn't ruin the game. You should be good enough not to become the victim of poor officiating. Yeah, for the most part, yeah. But the problem with that is officiating usually sucks throughout the game. It's just, unfortunately, too often it rears its ugly head in a game's later moments, a la the punt return TD waved off with a phantom call of the Iowa Hawkeyes versus Minnesota Golden Gophers last October. Remember, Cooper DeGene had that brilliant punt return. They were reviewing to see if he was in bounds, and then they decided after that, oh, man, that's a nebulous, that was an invalid fair catch. The problem here is officiating gets progressively worse, but the remedies become likewise. I mean, there is rarely any punishment for officials, occasional demotion or being pulled from more high-profile contests. But worse than that, we never look into the possible betting activity by these officials, yet players are continuously monitored for it. More on that one later, by the way, on betting on games, because there's some news that's come out of the state of Iowa. Anyway, officials rarely pay any substantive penalty, and more often than that, they're bailed out by league officials, or they're bailed out by their supervisory crew, or the supervisor of officials. It needs to stop. When both fans and broadcast personnel are all but shocked by a call or by the results of an official review, it should be telling league officials and game officials that something is wrong. Now, whether it's the system or whether it's officials themselves, overhaul is needed. I'm sorry, overhaul is needed. Oddly enough, the situation in the Portland-Oklahoma City game didn't even go to any sort of review. Unbelievable. NFL playoffs, AFC and NFC championship games are this weekend. The AFC, the KC Chiefs go to the Baltimore Ravens. NFC, Detroit goes to San Francisco. Now, last week, Baltimore tied at the half against Houston, but basically dominated the second half, won 34-10. The Chiefs got an early fourth quarter TD, which they made stand up alone against Buffalo. And in typical Buffalo fashion, place kicker Tyler Bass pushed a game-tying field goal in the closing minutes, in the closing minute, wide right. Seriously, wide right. That has become the official rally kill cry of Buffalo fans. I mean, the funny part, I was telling T. Bodie today on the phone, I knew before they lined up, that was going to happen. I literally did. I knew that was going to happen. I told them that. But I knew it. My wife was saying, well, we'll just go to overtime. I said, it's not going to. He's going to miss it. So the Chiefs won 27-24. In the NFC, Christian McCaffrey got a late touchdown to lift the 49ers over the Packers 24-21. That featured a TD reception by former Hawkeye George Kittle. In the other game, the Detroit Lions held on to beat the Bucs, the Tampa Bay Bucs 31-23. Another former Hawkeye tight end, Sam Laporta, racked up 9 catches for 65 yards in that game. Current betting lines, AFC, Baltimore is favored by 3.5, over under of 44.5. NFC, the 49ers are a 7-point favorite with an over under of 50.5. So it'll be interesting. Then a couple weeks after that, the Super Bowl. College football, two different stories on ESPN about the state of Iowa gambling probe that resulted in suspensions, loss of eligibility, or even transfers or dismissals for several Iowa Hawkeye and Iowa State Cyclone athletes. First one's a story on ESPN. Attorney for former Iowa State players says sports wagering case was, quote, warrantless, unquote, investigation. An attorney for former Iowa State players charged with illegal sports wagering has accused the state of launching a warrantless investigation in 2023 that targeted Iowa State and University of Iowa athletes without reasonable cause, resulting in some to lose their remaining NCAA eligibility. In a motion filed Monday, attorney Van Plum, who represents former Iowa State football players Isaiah Lee and others charged in the sports wagering probe, cited recent depositions with agents from Iowa's Division of Criminal Investigation that outlined how the inquiry began. 15 Iowa State and Iowa athletes, mainly football players, were charged last summer, primarily for making sports wagers on FanDuel or DraftKings under another person's account. Several of the athletes have pleaded guilty to a reduced charge of underage gambling. The motion states that Brian Sanger, special agent for Iowa's Division of Criminal Investigation, obtained access to a software tool called Kibana that allowed him to view the use of online betting applications in certain facilities through a geofence. Sanger allegedly first used the software to assess underage gambling at a freshman sophomore dormitory at the University of Iowa, but eventually was told he could not pursue the inquiry. This is important. He was told he could not pursue the inquiry. Sanger then allegedly used the same software to place a geofence around an Iowa athletic facility, restricted to athletes, coaches, and staff. Then he received the green light to continue. The result was the indictment of a handful of Iowa student athletes, even though the privacy of hundreds had been invaded, the motion reads. During Special Agent Sanger's deposition on January 19, 2024, he stated that he cannot remember why he decided to conduct the warrantless searches, but that he was concerned about things such as people infiltrating Iowa sports teams to gain insider information or match fixing. A similar geofence was placed around Iowa State's athletic facilities, which eventually led to athletes being charged. Athletes at Iowa and Iowa State have faced charges of tampering with records for allegedly falsifying information used to register accounts on mobile sports wagering apps or underage gambling. Lee, a starting defense lineman for Iowa State, left the team in August after being charged with tampering with records. Among the 115 bets he played on a mobile app, 12 were on Iowa State football games. That's not cool. The motion filed Monday, seeking discretionary discovery, states that Sanger and a team of DCI agents acted, quote, without reasonable cause, unquote, noting that no warrant, complaints, or tips of illegal gambling had been obtained before they began the investigation. Plum's filing also disputed Sanger's claim in his deposition that only athletes who wagered on accounts registered to other people were subject to criminal charges. There is a possibility that only high-profile athletes were targeted when charges were filed, the motion states. In a statement to ESPN later Monday, Plum said that motions are a direct result of information learned during the depositions, wherein Special Agent Sanger chose to use software that allowed him to access people's private information without a warrant, which raises constitutional issues involving illegal searches and seizures. Then we got this. Agent felt probe of Iowa State athletes was illegal. An agent involved in the state of Iowa's investigation into wagering activities of college athletes recently testified that the probe was an illegal search and that he was misled by those in charge. A motion filed Tuesday on behalf of Iowa State wrestler Paniro Johnson cited a deposition Friday by Mark Ludwig, a special agent with the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigations, which led the wagering inquiry of athletes at both Iowa State and Iowa. Johnson was among 15 college athletes charged. He and former football player Ioma Uwazirki, now with the Denver Broncos, were charged with felony identity theft. Christopher Sandy, Johnson's attorney, filed the motion seeking records about the investigation. According to the filing, Ludwig, a state witness, testified that he was told by an agent leading the operation that the investigation would be, quote, purely administrative, unquote, and would not result in criminal charges. Ludwig interviewed Iowa State football player Isaiah Lee under that premise and received confirmation from Lee that he had placed sports wagers under another person's account. Troy Nelson, a special agent in charge for Iowa's DCI, quote, congratulated Ludwig for obtaining a confession, according to the motion. Lee was charged with tampering with records. He allegedly falsified information used to register accounts on mobile sports wagering apps and left ISU's team in August. The court filing reads, Ludwig realized the purpose of the investigation was criminal in nature, with the sole targets being male Division I student athletes at the University of Iowa and Iowa State University, the court filing reads. Special Agent Ludwig advised his superiors that he would no longer participate in the investigation and requested reassignment. Ludwig also said in his deposition that he knows of other DCI agents who refused to participate in the investigation for the same reasons. Ludwig, quote, concluded that Iowa's DCI conducted an illegal search, unquote, of Iowa and Iowa State athletes without obtaining a warrant to use geofence technology to obtain wagering activity inside the school's athletic facilities, which are restricted to athletes, coaches, and staff. A separate motion filed Monday by Lee's attorney accused the state of launching a warrantless investigation that targeted high-profile college athletes. The motion filed Monday seeking discretionary discovery states that Brian Sanger, special agent for Iowa DCI, who led the task force for the investigation, along with a team of DEI agents, acted, quote, without reasonable cause, noting that no warrant, complaints, or tips of illegal gambling had been obtained before they began the investigation. Sanger obtained access to a software tool called Kibana that allowed him to view the use of online betting application in certain facilities through a geofence. David Jobes, assistant director for Iowa DCI, said, the DCI does not comment on ongoing court proceedings. DCI agents involved in the investigation act as witnesses, and it would be inappropriate to make any comments regarding legal filings or other court proceedings. Johnson, the wrestler, Padiro Johnson, is not participating in any wrestling meets attached to Iowa State, only unattached tournaments where he pays his own way. Several football players also lost their eligibility for the season, including ISU starting quarterback Hunter Deckers, not to mention Iowa defensive lineman Noah Shannon. From day one, when my athletes called me on that morning in early May, I knew this thing was a mess, and I knew it was mismanaged, and I knew it was mishandled, and I'm glad it's coming to light now, Cyclone wrestling coach Kevin Dresser told reporters. These athletes served really harsh penalties in the NCAA world, probably harsher than I think they should have. But at the same time, I'm not dismissing or minimizing that they made a mistake. And Mike just sent me a text. It's official. Jim Harbaugh to the San Diego Chargers. And I will talk about that shortly. Harbaugh is pulling the Pete Carroll maneuver. He's been busted, and he's getting out while he can. Allegedly, one of his sticking points in his contract negotiation with Michigan for a new contract was that he had to have complete immunity from any NCAA investigation stuff. So anyway, back to this. Iowa's Noah Shannon, and this is just talk. I don't know how accurate it is, but everything that's been put out is that Noah Shannon placed one bet on Iowa women's basketball. He didn't bet on his own sport. He didn't bet on his own team. He didn't bet on football at all. But he lost a year of eligibility. Now, look, I'm just taking up his case because he admitted wrongdoing from the beginning. Now, people say, why did this was not reported to the NCAA by DCI. It was reported by the schools who had an obligation to do that. That was the rule. If they don't report it, they're in trouble. Here's the problem. The NCAA itself is not equitable in how it hands down punishment. I'll just leave it at that. It is not equitable. But Noah Shannon paid a price for a $10 bet. Now, we've talked about this before. This is ridiculous in an age when DraftKings and FanDuel, everyone else, are running ads. They're running ads during games, during college football games. Yeah, they're doing it during pro games. The pros aren't allowed to bet on football either. But, I mean, my point is a kid lost a season of eligibility, lost his remainder of his career over a $10 bet. Now, I know a lot of people say, well, you know the rules. Really? You know, it's sort of like rules on underage drinking when all kinds of other underage kids go drinking at bars and don't get in the same trouble that athletes are targeted. Now, look, don't get me wrong. Athletes are getting all kinds of stuff now. They're getting NIL money. They're getting transfers, free transfer portal. Now, people say, well, they have to sit if it's a second transfer. That, you know what? Something a court last week said this could be anti-competitive. It could be a violation of employment law. And that's the end goal for the left, is to get them classified as employees. But now, an illegal investigation has rooted this out. Now, look, at this point, there's no reason for Noah Shannon to want to come back. But he didn't have that last year to really showcase himself. And frankly, the Iowa defensive line took a hit in terms of depth. But the overriding thing here, athletes were targeted with no reason. It wasn't like there was anything coming up, that there was something going on. There was no tip. They weren't able to cite any tips. When the one agent, Brian Sager, was asked, he doesn't remember why. Well, damn it all, when you're going to be doing an investigation like this, you better have a reason why. I forgot. I'm not sure. Really? My God. Unbelievable. And, of course, there are people who are trying to blame Governor Kim Reynolds for it. The lefties are saying, oh, Governor Reynolds did this. No, she didn't. Special Agent Brian Sanger did this. And his superiors told him to stop, and then he got more information, and they said, oh, let's go with it. So not having a warrant, they said no. And then not having a warrant, then they said, well, let's proceed anyway because we got good info. You know, Kurt Ferentz has been outspoken about the punishment here. There were other Iowa players that were only suspended for a little bit of time. An Iowa sport or whatever, I don't know. But this, the head's got a roll here. I hope to God Noah Shannon goes after the state. He admitted his guilt. He wasn't even underage. He wasn't charged with anything by the state. He admitted to the NCAA what he did, but he was not charged by the state because he didn't do anything wrong. So yeah, I hope he sues the living crap out of the Iowa state of Iowa DCI. I hope he sues the NCAA and gets some money. Because the NCAA benefited from this poison, fruit of the poison tree. Yeah, this is ridiculous. It's disgusting what happened. More college football. Quarterback Will Rogers, who transferred from Mississippi State to Washington, re-entered the transfer portal when Washington head coach Kalen DeBoer bolted for Alabama after Nick Saban's retirement. However, speaking with new teammates, new head coach Jed Fish, formerly of Arizona, he decided to withdraw his name from the portal, so he's staying. Arizona quarterback commit Desmond Williams has also chosen to follow Jed Fish to Washington, as well as current Arizona running back Jonah Coleman is also heading to Washington. Meanwhile, Washington has lost several QBs themselves since the DeBoer to Bama news was announced, including one who was following DeBoer to Bama. Remember back when there was this perception of honor among coaches that the mantra was players don't commit to the coaches, they commit to the school. Which, of course, was blown out of the water when Lincoln Riley left Oklahoma for USC and probably took a ton of his Oklahoma roster to USC via the transfer portal, including last year's Heisman Trophy winner, Caleb Williams. I get that the Supreme Court has ruled on NIL and may end up having to decide on sitting out for multiple transfers as that is being debated in courts. But when coaches can now take half their roster with them when they move jobs, I'm sorry, it really does hasten the dying of the sport of college football, at least as a sport having any semblance of, quote, not being professional. I won't use the term amateur or amateurism because what has happened the last few years pretty much tells me that concept was over long before courts or legislation entered the picture. In any event, something has to be done. This really will kill the game. The money chasing the game now will start going away when enough people stop showing up to watch in stadiums, or when only a handful of fan bases are left to tune in at home or in sports bars. Look, the imminent death of numerous bowl games will also factor in, I am sure. But secondary markets, small schools, they're going to get pushed out. If you really don't think that a Big Ten would kick an Iowa out down the road, if they're Hawkeye fans, Big Ten will never kick us out. They haven't seen a college football environment run by bean counters and wokesters. If you don't believe me, look at Oregon State and Washington State to see the potential hieroglyphics, the writing on the wall. 10 or 20 years from now, schools won't even be judged on one loss record or postseason performance or number of conference titles. They'll be judged on their DEI makeup, their carbon footprint, and their social credit scores. Last Sunday, Iowa's Caitlin Clark was knocked over by an exuberant Ohio State fan. Lady Buckeyes pulled off a big upset win last Sunday. 10 years from now, the next version of Caitlin Clark, who will admittedly be inferior, but the next celebrated person, won't be getting bowled over by, they'll be getting bowled over by the player formerly known as Dave Whitfield, now known as DeVita Whitfield, women's college basketball's first ever 6'9", 260-pound transgender power forward, who, by the way, transferred in from big state U to bigger state U when Coach I Had a Dick made the same move a week earlier. I'm telling you, if fans don't jump in, fan bases, big donors even have got to start jumping in. School leadership's got to jump in. It's becoming ridiculous. When you look at the transfer portal and you look at how coaches go from one to the next, it's becoming ridiculous. Mike says, let's hope that nightmare doesn't come true, but look at the LPGA. Exactly right. Seriously, we will be looking in 10, maybe 20 years, or I should say 20, maybe 10, at social credit scores of schools and of players. Hell, we might be having AI coaches. By the way, it'll be interesting to see if and or how many Michigan football players enter the transfer portal, which they are allowed to do for 30 days when their coach has left. Now, he's leaving this case for the pros. Still. Yeah, he wanted blanket immunity in the wake of NCAA investigations. So, ESPN has released its way too early All-America team for 2024. No Hawkeyes made the first team, although Hawkeye linebacker J.A. Higgins did make second team. No mention of new Hawkeye Caden Proctor. Came in from Alabama after Saban's retirement. Hawkeye fans will remember. He DK'd Iowa for Alabama a week before signing day, or less than a week before signing day last year. He was all-freshman SEC and I believe all-American, freshman all-American. I'm not sure first team, but. Meanwhile, in Iowa City, the Hawkeyes have no new offensive coordinator, no new wide receiver coach, and no new quarterback coach. However, the interim tag has been taken off athletic director Beth Getz, who officially became the AD last week sometime. College basketball, number 2 Purdue and number 4 Houston had wins last night. Number 6 Kentucky fell at South Carolina. The Big Ten, number 13 Wisconsin barely got a win over Minnesota. Nebraska had a relatively easy time with Ohio State. Tonight, number 10 Illinois visits Northwestern. The Hawkeyes are hosting Maryland. And although I'm doing my show, I'm going to check in on that score real quick because I'm not watching it. Should be, but I'm not. Why? Because, well, I'm doing the show. I just couldn't just walk away. Couldn't do that, could I? So, anyway, the Hawks look to get revenge when they head to Michigan this Saturday. While this is a team, in my opinion, is at best an NIT-level team. Just saying. Hawks up 22-14 right now. But like I say, this is an NIT-level team, I think. There is some talent in the underclass ranks. Owen Freeman, Laji Dembele, Brock Harding, they've all seen good court time as true freshmen, as has Price Sanford. Sophomores, Josh Dix, he's definitely improving. Desante Bowen, I think, is incrementally. Junior, Peyton Sanford, continues to get better. And as I said, his freshman brother, Price, looks promising. Look, the Hawks are 11-7, 3-4 in the Big Ten. They're done with Purdue. They do have Illinois twice and Wisconsin. but there's just no guarantees. The rest of their schedule really poses no games that aren't winnable, but they're too inconsistent, especially on the defensive end of the court, to be considered, in my opinion, an NCAA-bound team. Caitlin Clark update, the Lady Hawkeye superstar, currently leads the country in scoring, 31.7 points per game. She's second in assist at 7.7. She leads in three-pointers per game with 5.2. Has 11 30-point games, three 40-point games, and four triple-doubles. She is 176 points from the all-time NCAA scoring record with 10 games remaining. She recently passed Brittany Griner, who Al from Vito Show thinks is a man and who spent time in the Russian jail system for taking weed into the country. To top it off, the racists have come out of the woodwork. Dawn Staley from South Carolina has thrown shade at Caitlin Clark that would make both Barack Obama and Big Mike proud. She is just an absolute racist. There is no best internet laughy this week, but we do have a question of the week. I do. When did Fannie Willis become a victim? Seriously, she is being investigated now for improprieties, financial and otherwise, in her court. Here is her court prosecution of President Trump. But somehow Fannie Willis made herself the victim. Joe Gibson is in the chat room, and he has posted up a link that I can't get to open. Trying to get it to open, but I can't get it to open. Hey, Joe, if you could put some stuff in, what is this case about? It says, I'm seeing that it says North Carolina political candidate who denies Nazi beliefs will be allowed on 2024 ballot. He says this is people are out of control. The media is nothing but lies. That's fact. Joe, by the way, is a candidate. Full disclosure, he is a candidate in North Carolina for State House, I believe, District 65. So I would love to hear more about it. I'm trying to get it to open, and I have one of those Windows 10 laptops, so I can't click on it as a link. And I'm highlighting it. Oh, I know what I'll do. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to open it as a new link. That way. Okay. Political battle out of Rockingham County has gained higher profile than many candidate challenges, in part because the North Carolina's GOP's concerted push to block Joseph Gibson from running for a House seat. Okay. So this is about, a Republican candidate for a state legislative seat who denies accusations from fellow Republicans that he's a neo-Nazi will be allowed to run for office in 2024, the State Board of Elections decided on Tuesday. The board's unanimous vote in favor was related not to his views, but rather to his criminal record. He has a felony record from Connecticut in the 1990s, and Republican Party insiders have been using that to try to block him from running for office. But there's no evidence he's ineligible to vote or run for office, according to rulings from both the County Elections Board and now the State Board. Said he's expecting the GOP to now apologize for the character assassination and political assassination targeted at him as he moves forward with his challenge during the primary against Representative Reese Pirtle of Rockingham. Finished his probation over a decade ago, which state law requires for people to regain their voting rights. And although his political opponents wanted him to provide paperwork, both elections boards decided that is not required. His testimony that his rights have been restored, combined with the lack of any evidence of further convictions, were viewed as enough proof. funny. It was Democrats that put Joe over the top. That was in Rockingham County. In the state level, it was a 4-0 decision. Wow. Why would the GOP be blocking? That tells us enough about this party. One of the GOP insiders said it could embarrass if he's on the ballot, accusing him of holding neo-Nazi beliefs. Really? He's not a Nazi. He's never supported him. But he has had him call in on his podcast. That's true. He's also had Black Panthers call in, including people like Brother Warren. It's amazing what the media will do and what they will say. It's really amazing to me that, as Vito and I have talked about this, how Republicans eat their young and how they will inside. I mean, you know, take a Liz Cheney. I guess that's why we shouldn't be surprised. That the party literally does this. Rather than encourage people to run and encourage people to get involved, that they use this crap to try to knock people off the ballot or to just knock them out entirely. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. But again, now I won't say that this particular case is all about deep state, but Joe's on the queue now, so I'm going to bring him in. Joe, how you doing?
Hey, how are you?
Good. So literally the state party literally went this far to try and keep you off the ballot? That is ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, the real issue is in my county, they're trying to build a casino. And all the legislators and lawmakers promised the voters that they were not going to pass the gambling legislation. Well, all the builders, out-of-town builders, apparently greased the pockets of all the politicians, and they went behind the voters' back and rezoned all the land to get it ready for the casino. And, well, the people caught on, and they had a big protest. So I'm the only candidate that's against, because, you know, it's right down the road from my home, actually, and I'm against the casino being built. So that's the real issue here. It's money. It's money, and that was the real issue. So they found a way to slander me, and they probably took some excerpts from my podcast show, which you stated correctly. I've had all different people call in my podcast show. I don't control who calls in.
Right.
And they say I'm a neo-Nazi now. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Well, I forgot who called in on Al's show the other night. I think you were in there listening. That guy, Chewbacca.
Yeah.
So I have had experience. I don't know if they call themselves this anymore, but the Pan-African International Movement, you know, that wants full reparations.
Yes.
But, you know, they portray themselves as this open, you know, they're actually the kind of racists I'm talking about, like Dawn Staley, the head coach of South Carolina. That they hate white people, you know, and look, that's their right to hate white people, but don't call them open and don't call them, you know, open-minded and all that. It's racism. It's just of a different color, so to speak. I mean, I can't believe that they use that to portray, I mean, good Lord, but like you said before,
it's insane.
Yeah.
It's insanity. It's insanity. And then what they do is, in the ADL apparently wrote an article about me also a couple of years ago. And at the same thing was when I had guests or I had people come on. I remember I was interviewing militia groups, and I believe I had NSM members come on and Black Panther people. And I was, you know, interviewing these groups at this time because that was a hot topic in the country. So I had all these people call in. And we had, you know, these spark conversations. Sarge was a part of it. I remember he was my co-host. And now I'm a sympathizer. I have ties with them because I'm a podcast. It's just insane. It's totally insane. I'm an extremist now, too. I'm an anti-government extremist, like Donald Trump, you know?
This is what I don't understand when they spout this crap. Why would somebody who's so anti-government run for office? Do they not understand how stupid that sounds? Do they not understand how stupid that sounds? I mean, it's just
exactly.
I mean, and it's like, you know, I don't know, all of it. The Fannie Willis becoming a victim is just almost beyond reprehensible.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, it's not even, it's not funny anymore. It's just.
No, it's not. And this is what, this is their game, you notice, this election cycle. They're trying to get people removed from the ballot. Have you ever heard such, I mean, so many people, they're trying to get removed. I want them removed from the ballot. I'm challenging this candidacy. It's happening all over the country. You know, thankfully, I won. Thank God I won. I mean.
Yeah. Well, how's the campaign going? Other than the fact that you're now labeled as a Nazi sympathizer.
In my county, we did an independent poll. I got a couple people together, and we called 200 voters, and we're neck to neck, me and my opponent right now. It's a 6-point differential. He's winning. He's winning by 6 points. So you know, I'll tell the truth. You know.
Yeah.
But 6 points. That's not too bad. He's an incumbent, you know. I mean, and with what they're doing to me, is it's backfiring. Well, that's what they're doing. The people are awake. I went to a convention of the states meeting last Saturday, and there was about 25 people there, and they all supported me. They were like, what they're doing to you is just totally wrong, you know. And so it's backfiring.
Yeah.
So keep it up, guys. Just keep it up.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, literally, I mean, it's that – I don't know if you were in earlier. I was telling a story about in – New Hampshire, there was supposedly some robocall using Dopey Joe's voice to discourage people from going to the polls.
I heard that.
What is so hilarious is that that you have Democrats talking about the sanctity of our elections. I mean, my God, if there's anyone who has shown no sanctity with regard to our elections, it has been – I mean, it's that they can put that kind of stuff pen to paper and submit that. And say that.
And you know what the media has done too? You know what the media has done too? They quietly buried Omar and AOC. And remember them?
Yeah.
How they were the anti-Israel movement. They quietly buried that. And those people should be in the forefront of being scrutinized for their beliefs and their extremist beliefs. You know?
Yeah. Well, and you look at the number of anti-Semitism claims and incidents. It's frightening. I mean, you know.
Yeah,
it's a thing
I openly supported Israel. I openly supported them on my podcast. What Hamas did was criminal.
Yeah. But this anti-Semitism isn't even coming from like some, you know, jackboot thug or some, you know, quiet, you know, behind this. It's coming right out in the open. I mean, universities, you know, you have people that are in our universities that are signing off on this stuff. And they're like, oh, no, they're not, you know, they're not. It's ridiculous and it's scary. It is scary.
Yeah, it is. It's bad, you know. And these narratives get pushed and they're dangerous. That's not what America is about. You have a right to your opinion, but you also have a responsibility.
Yeah.
You know,
you
have a citizen. You have a responsibility, and you need to be held accountable for what you say. Judged by the content of your character. That's who you should, how you should be judged.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
And to think that. Well, even, you know, Martin Luther King even said, it's not going to be us. It's not even going to be our kids. It's going to be our grandkids. Well, guess what? He's got to be turning in his grave at this point and seeing what's happened.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, how bad it has gotten. But not only that, how it's – I mean, if you were behind the scenes to ask Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton or on the other side of the coin, some of these, you know, like what was his name? The Ku Klux Klan guy, John. Oh, what was his name? I used to. No. The guy that was the actual leader of the Ku Klux Klan. I forgot his name. I saw a thing where he and one of the black separatists pretended to team up and say we want the same things. We're not aligned, but we want the same things. They want whites only. We want blacks only, and we want to go our separate ways. But I mean, all of them, behind the scenes, they're race baiters because guess what? Without it, they're no one. You know, what's Jesse Jackson if there's harmony? What is Jesse Jackson with peace and harmony on this planet? I mean,
he's nothing. Nothing. Yeah, he has no job to do.
Yeah, he has no purpose. And it's just it's frightening that people will continue to push and keep that alive, you know? I mean,
I know.
Really? You know? I mean,
it's so insane. Yeah, it's so insane. And there's so many other issues and so many problems we face as the people today in this country that why would you consume yourself on those types of issues? They're dead-end issues. They're not going to result in any type of victories or, you know, I mean, it's just asinine, if you ask me.
Yeah.
You know, it really is.
Well, and you made a great point. The media, it's like there's no – I haven't heard – the only thing I heard AOC's name today because she and Pelosi were both part of the using their campaign accounts to benefit, you know, using social media stuff from the government to push into their campaign accounts. But other than that, I haven't heard AOC's name much. I haven't heard Ilhan Omar's name. I haven't heard it all
very
of a sudden.
Very interesting. Yeah, quiet.
Yeah, they're
very quiet.
The complete protection of these guys, gals, whatever
the
you
media,
want to call them. You know?
The media, I'm going to be honest with you, the media is the toilet. Well, after I've seen what they did to me these past 2 weeks, I mean, I've been on the news at 6 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 6 a.m. every single day, and what they've done to me, I can see what Donald Trump's talking about. They are fake news. It's fake. It's all fake. It's just storytelling power. That's all it is.
Yeah. Well, somebody pointed out on Twitter, remember when you listened to – you could trust almost anyone with news, that you heard news and you decided how to respond to it. Now it's – you hear stories, but you're deciding whether it's actual news, whether it's something that actually happened. It's not – you don't even – you never used to question if they said this many soldiers died in Vietnam. I mean, you suspected, you know, later on you heard that there was stuff being moved around. But for the most part, you pretty much trusted, you know, even a Dan Rather. But look at how fast he, you know, what he became.
It's
you know, there used to be a time you would have trusted that those people. Now, they're literally, I mean, it's not only is it not content of their character, it's almost worse in color of their skin. I mean, it's like, certain people are advanced in media just because they're black or because they're pretty or whatever. It's never been more shallow, you know. And here we are years later. So
it's an information war. We're in an information war, and we're losing that war. That's definite. Yeah. Because history is a false narrative. History. Nobody knows history anymore. I mean, just listen to these people and how they talk about history. I mean, especially the Israel thing. And there's no such thing as Israel before 1948. Are you an idiot? You know, I mean,
and yet they're the same people that call themselves Christians, and they say there was no such thing as Israel. It's like, really? God, that's news to me.
Oh, it's unreal. Yeah. It's unreal. But what most important thing for your listeners is, look, we've got to support the grassroots candidate. This is the problem we're having because we keep voting the same people in office every single year, these incumbents, year after year after year. We need new, fresh people in there, grassroots, Constitution-believing people, patriots. That's what we have to have. Otherwise, we're finished as a country.
Now, is North Carolina, do they have at the state level, do they have term limits?
Not on the state legislator. For the governor, they do. For the governor they do, but not for the senator or congressman, no.
Okay. No, not senator. I'm talking about the state level, like a state house, state senate.
No term limits. Nope.
Oh, really? Okay. So Florida, where I am, they have, you know, not just the governor, but they have it at the state, you know. Now, they say you can't, you know, in other words, so if you served, I think it's three terms or four terms as a two-year terms as a state legislator, then you can't appear on the ballot. In that same district, you can do write-in, but you can't appear on the ballot and all that stuff as a candidate in that district. So they just move now. You know, they just move to another district. I mean,
You know what's interesting about my election this time coming around is I have the Republican incumbent that's running against me. I'm a Republican. And in the primary, March 5th is the primary. And after the primary, there's going to be no general election. Nobody's challenging the seat. So whoever wins the primary wins the seat. That's very odd, don't you think? Yeah. You know, I mean, Democrats don't get the vote. Independents don't get the vote. Only the primary gets to choose the seat.
Well,
that's
very interesting.
Odd.
Is the district heavily Republican? I mean, is there a reason that no Democrat is challenged?
Well, it is pretty much heavily – well, it's mainly heavily unaffiliated. I mean, 62% unaffiliated. Then the rest is Republican and Democrat, but the majority Republican. So, there's no Democratic challenger. No Democrat is challenging, is running in my district. That's amazing. It's very odd. First time in a while.
What does a state house seat pay? And I'm not push. I don't know if it's.
Oh,
you know,
Lord.
I mean, I'm sure it's like
very
find
little.
Out.
Yeah, very little. It's like I think the base salary is like $20,000, and then you get $100 a day allowance or $100 a week allowance.
For travel expenses. They have it. It's not, but you know, like a congressman's salary or whatever.
Well, you get what happens is you get put on these committees. You see, you get put on these committees,
you,
and
now,
that's what pays.
How long are you in session? I mean, how long? If you're elected, how long do you serve in session? I mean, is it like Congress where you're constantly going on breaks and going back, or is it like Florida where there's like a 2 month period and that's it? They're in Tallahassee.
That's about what it is. Yeah, it's very. Very, very rare you're there. You go there, pass the budget, work there. You work with your committees a few times, and that's it, and then you're done. Then you go do your other job, you know. So I'll be working, you know, obviously doing something else. But this is a stepping stone for me. I have a good feeling that I'm going to win this time around. I really do. If I don't, I'd be shocked. I mean, yeah. I'll never give up. But the thing of it is, when I win, this is a stepping stone. Because if I win, then I'll probably go up to the United States congressman next, because I want to make a difference. And I mean, our country's broken. We've got to get good patriots in there. We've got to stand up and fight, and we've got to stand up for our Constitution. You know, our republic is lost right now.
Yeah, and not only that, it's literally become, I mean, with stuff like DEI, you know, it's there's literally nothing about merit, skill. I mean, we're disincentivizing it. And it's going to that's what's going to trickle down. It's like, why do I need an education? Why do I need a trade? Why do I need to, my gosh, the government's going to take care of me, you know?
I know.
Ridiculous. It's a scary thought,
From the country I grew up in the 80s, I just look at the 90s was really where they really put their plans in motion. Now, since the millennium, since the, 2000, it's just in the 9/11 attacks, it's just boom, gone down every single year. Our country's been, I'm surprised it's held up this long. I mean, I don't see us lasting much longer. That's the way things are going. I mean, we just see it. And these people, because I say there's a new world order, or the globalists have an agenda, I'm an anti-government extremist, I'm a conspiracy theorist, they're still touting that nonsense. Everyone knows there's a new world order. That's common fact now. 20 years ago, you would have got away with that. Today, you're not going to get away with that, you know?
Scarily, is there are people that almost welcome it. Not just the new world order types themselves, but people that say, "Well, gosh, you know, we need somebody that just pat us on the head and set us in the right direction." It's like, really?
Yep. Number.
You have that?
Label us in numbers.
Yeah, unbelievable. I've got to get back. We're almost up against the hard one. So I know your show's on Tuesdays. You have other nights that you sometimes go. So I will tell listeners, Restoring Our Republic, Joseph Gibson, he's on mainly Tuesday nights, but as I'd say it about any of our shows as well, when you go in, you get an account, follow a show, follow it so you get updates from any time they post a show, you'll get an update that the show's coming on. So in the meantime, good luck, and we'll be looking
to see
how things go, and we'll talk to you later, Joe. Thanks for calling.
God bless the Republic. Take care. Bye.
God bless. A great guy, Joe Gibson, Tuesday nights, Restoring Our Republic, also running for State House in California District, North Carolina District 65. And as you see, he has been allowed to remain on the ballot. But it's funny, as he said, he understands now what President Trump goes through with the type of people we have out there, the type of things people will do, say, the use of media, how media will try and twist things. It's scary. It really is. Hey, I want to thank Joe for being on and Indy Hawk for listening in. Also for Mike and T. Bodie listening in the phones. And any of those of you who were not in the chat or in the phone queue, but those out there listening, thank you very much for listening in. In the meantime, folks, have a great rest of your week. Have a great and safe weekend. And God bless America. We'll be here next week, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Wednesday. Duck is coming in late. Oh, Duck, you got in late. Sorry, Duck, but we're out of here, so we are heading out. But, Duck, hey, thanks for making it in when you did. Meantime, here's a good show, a good song. NWO theme, New World Order from WCW days. folks. Have a good one.